Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Wednesday, March 19th, 2025. I mean, this is one of the last days of winter. Time just keeps on slipping. Just like Steve Miller. Keeps on slipping. Anyway, yes, I know it's corny. Been gone a couple of days here. This is essentially what the issue is. I'm starting a new project towards the end of April. That's going to take a while. And I need to get like all my work done. In some cases, years worth of work done within by then. So, and then we have training classes and everything else going on. What I try to do is I try to deliver the best quality program I can with what I got. If I'm going to come up here after working an 18-hour day, order of liberty and prosperity. It's not going to work for you. So we're not going to be happy. It's not going to be a high-quality program that you deserve. So how's everything going out there? A lot of stuff going on. We're going to talk about some news today. With everything, we're going to talk about some news. We're going to talk, we'll see how far along we get here. Not so much politics, but let me make it perfectly clear. I should add this. All right. Part of what I do is I report on safety in the news, right, obviously. But everything here has like a safety bent to it, or it's something I'm interested in that came up during the news. I'm not an apologist for any politician. I try to, when I'm here, I try to report it right down the middle, at least for hour one. If I go into an hour two, not so much with this. And what I'm finding out is stuff that we predicted a long time ago is now comes to fruition eventually here. One of them being the way things were handled during COVID for a recent situation. The other being demographic issues, because now everyone's talking about demography, and I think this is going to become a bigger issue because starting next month, I believe it's April 8th, is the premiere. Is The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, right? And what is The Handmaid's Tale about? Some people say, well, it's about a religious takeover, and now we have to worry about a religious takeover and Donald Trump, blah, 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 blah. If you want to interpret it that way, I can't really stop you. You know, you have a right to free thought. But Margaret Atwood, the author of that whole series of books, right, Testaments and Handmaid's Tale, she swerved into what would happen if there was a demographic collapse. What she said was religious takeover, but it was essentially a demographic collapse in the book. And now we have people talking about demographic collapses. We talk about it here on this program. So we're probably going to touch on a little bit of that. Blame the employee. Right. I picked up a safety book this week off of Amazon that I heard about, specifically on root cause analysis, because you know everybody wants to talk about root cause analysis. And you gotta, and everyone here knows my opinion on it. Root cause analysis could go any way you want it to, essentially. Anywhere where you want it to go. So I was doing an investigation one time, and someone said, Jimmy, you need to do a root cause analysis. And this was the client. I said, well, where am I allowed to go with that root cause analysis? Because, and, you know, I'm being paid. I'm being paid to consult. I'm being paid to give an opinion, give fact, you know, things of that insight, things of that nature. And I say, well, the problem is that you hired a contractor with zero corporate culture for safety. This was a general contractor. None. I said they came here without even a safety plan. None of their guys are, and it was men, have some safety training. The cards that they produce are like from people who are disreputable on the OSHA banned list. They come out here, don't even have hard hats and safety glasses. They're saying that nowhere else that they work requires hard hats or safety glasses, so therefore we have to supply them to them, which, baloney, right? And going on and on, I said, you hired, like, what mechanism do you have in place for hiring people if you're hiring companies that are like this? Well, Jim, you're not allowed to talk about that. Really? No, you can't talk about that. You can't go down that rabbit hole. We want you to find the root cause. And well, the root cause, one of the major ones, is that you hire incompetent people. Yeah, but you're not allowed to go down that rabbit hole. You got to blame them. Because our lawyers, the liability, we're not to blame for anything. Oh, okay. Follow a lot of human resource blogs and human resource attorneys that are out there. And as a reminder, human resources, they have the best of intentions, right? We know that. We know they have the best of intentions. However, a lot of human resources people, what's their job? Is to defend the company. And what's your job? Is to promote yourself, to promote safety. Back during the early part of my career, this is what I didn't do. I was concentrating on the technical end of things, not developing those soft skills and learning about soft skills. We weren't permitted to do that. Hey, you're the safety person. Screw you. You're a non-production situation. And that was it. So things have changed as we've gone along. But one of the things that we learned in the last couple of weeks is you're being hired as the expert. You're the expert. Act like one. That doesn't mean that you know it all. Right? Right? Know it all. Well, how do you? N-I-K-N-K-I-N. KIA, right? Know-it-all. Don't be the safety know-it-all out there. Go out there and do your job. And if you don't know something, say, I'll get back to you. But what you need to be an expert on is a little bit of psychology on how you manage people. You need to be upfront and forward with things. Because I tell you what, they're going to try to intimidate you. And we talk about that on this program, the type of strategies that people use to intimidate you. We don't give really any solutions other than to document it and realize that sometimes things are done that are illegal. So one of my questions I always ask is, well, we're not going to do X, Y, and Z, Jim. Okay, so what laws are we going to obey? Because you do realize that Occupational Safety and Health Act out there, right? There is an Occupational Safety and Health Act out there, and it's federal law, and you got to obey it. So, let's go right to our first commercial break, and we will get back to you. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Polzel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives in some information that you might be interested in.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
All right, so here we go. Here. So we'll be releasing the video. What I've been doing is recording things and then releasing the video and the podcast from the live show. Things tend to work a little bit better that way. And if I have, like just now, I put up something on the screen that probably shouldn't have been there. Nothing obscene, I assure you. Nothing obscene. So just shouldn't have been there. So we're going to be editing that out. All right. This is from, so the U.S. Department of Labor has not been really releasing anything here as far as press releases go. But we're going to share whatever they have, and we're going to find out plenty of other government organizations. So the, what's it called? Voice of America went off the air on Friday, Saturday, March 15th, following an executive order. Basically, some of the reports were, and we use Voice of America here as of late. Voice of America, according to the administration, irredeemable. Essentially, it was set up many, many years ago as a promotion for American views, right? And we weren't able to get it in this country. And then in the early 2010s, around that time period, we were able to get Voice of America News. And it was official, like, so Soviet Union had Pravda, Truth. This was our version, and it would go all over the world promoting American things. But what happened was, like, a lot of, there's been accusations, like, accusations made at a lot of news services that they're biased and everything else. And, okay, they're biased. Now, this is from time immemorial, but they, you need to be fair. So, and what happened was the Trump administration ended up pulling the plug on VOA. And now that Sammy Hagar song, what are they, no one will know what that is, right? VOA has a song, VOA, Voice of America. U.S. Department of Labor awards $793,000 to continue unemployment assistance for Tennessee residents affected by Tropical Storm Helene. That swept the area in September 2024. Many workers had their lives completely upended when Tropical Storm Helene was swept across Tennessee. As communities continue to work to rebuild, I'm pleased to approve additional unemployment assistance for hardworking Tennesseans who were impacted by this disaster, said Secretary Lori Chavez de Raymer. Department's Employment and Training Administration awarded a grant to Tennessee Department of Labor and Workforce Development to enable them to deliver benefit payments the state's eligible disaster unemployment assistance claimants, and to cover program administrative costs. On October 2nd, 2024, the Federal Emergency Management Agency issued the major disaster declaration, enabling the state to request federal assistance. And this is supported by the Robert T. Stafford Disaster Relief and Emergency Assistance Act in coordination with Federal Emergency Management Agency. U.S. Department of Labor today, and this is from yesterday, right? U.S. Department of Labor today announced Keith E. Sonderling as the 38th Deputy Secretary of Labor. Sonderling returns to the department where he served as acting and deputy administrator in the Wage and Hour Division. He most recently served as the Commissioner of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity from 2020 to 2024. During his first stint at the Department of Labor, the Wage and Hour Division set records for enforcement, collections, educational outreach events. Sonderling also oversaw the development and publication of large-scale deregulatory rules and authored numerous opinion letters, field assistance bulletins, and all-agency memorandums. In addition, Sonderling was instrumental in developing the division's first comprehensive self-audit program, which collected more than $7 million for nearly 11,000 workers. Keith's institutional knowledge and policy expertise will continue to be invaluable in our fight to put American workers first. I'm thrilled to have him on the team and look forward to working alongside him to renew the American dream. Returning to the Department of Labor, where I began my career in government, is truly an honor, said Deputy Secretary Sonderling. In my new role, I am committed to helping Secretary Chavez de Remer in advancing President Trump's labor agenda, most importantly, putting American workers first, end quote. Before entering government service, Sonderling was a partner at a law firm. So, we'll see how he does here with this whole thing. We wish him a lot of luck, and, you know, with that. So, What next? Let's see if they have updated the org chart. Let's see if we can get that for you. About OSHA. OSHA organizational chart. So here we are. So far, this is what we have in the org chart here. Assistant Secretary of Labor for Occupational Safety and Health is Amanda Woodley-Howe, acting. Senior Policy Advisor Mark Asplund. Special Advisor Matthew Martin. Chief of Staff is vacant. Office of Communications is Francis Mellinger. Controlled Correspondence is Adam Corsi. And it goes on and on and on. A lot of A's there. But let's see how this goes as we progress along here. So with that, and EPA, as usual, has a lot of stuff going on. So we went over this last week, this other stuff. So in case you missed it, and it's from this morning. Exclusive coverage on EPA's historic day of deregulation. Last week, a U.S. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced the 31 historic actions. We went through it on our last program, undertaken by the agency, the most consequential and momentous day of deregulation in U.S. history. These monumental actions prioritize the agency's core mission of protecting human health and the environment while fulfilling President Trump's promise to unleash American energy, lower costs of living for Americans, and revitalize the American auto industry, restore the rule of law, and give power back to the states to make their own decisions. And this is from Fox News. Biden's woke green agenda on chopping block as EPA announces most consequential day of deregulation. And many, many, many different news releases. EPA Administrator Zeldin travels to St. Louis, Missouri to discuss radioactive waste cleanup efforts and celebrate Ag Day. On Monday, March 17, the U.S. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin traveled to St. Louis, Missouri to meet with Senator Josh Hawley, Republican Missouri, and community members for a roundtable discussion on the West Lake landfill. They discussed the work EPA and Senator Hawley are doing to help those impacted. The West Lake landfill Superfund site was added to the NPL list in 1990. So basically, it's been there for 35 years. Really. There's the link that they give you with that. With the background, we won't go into it. Following the roundtable discussion, Administrator Zeldin, alongside Senator Hawley, traveled to the West Lake Landfill Superfund site. After touring West Lake, the group traveled to view portions of Coldwater Creek. EPA and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers are actively involved with cleaning up Superfund sites like the St. Louis Air Force site, which includes Coldwater Creek. And St. Louis community, and this is according to Zeldin, quote, the St. Louis community has been dealing with the effects of West Lake Landfill for decades. Hearing directly from those most impacted will help this administration align EPA priorities to continue to help them. I want to thank Senator Hawley for putting together the roundtable and continuing to be a strong advocate for his constituents. When I was going through my confirmation process, I promised Senator Hawley that the EPA will enthusiastically recommit the urgent need of cleaning up West Lake. On Tuesday, March 18th, Administrator Zeldin celebrated National Agriculture Day in Chesterfield, Missouri at STEM Farms, participating in a roundtable discussion hosted by Missouri Farm Bureau. Local farmers, elected officials, and Farm Bureau leadership talked about water issues, crop protection, and pesticides, biofuels, and more. Following the roundtable, Administrator Zeldin toured the farm. All right, EPA and Texas partners celebrate National Farm Ag Day at the Collin County Farm. And, you know, Regional Administrator Scott Mason was there from EPA Region 6. From wheat farms in Oklahoma to rice fields in Arkansas, Louisiana, to cattle ranches in New Mexico, the agriculture community across EPA Region 6 provides food, fiber, and fuel while stewarding and conserving the land. I look forward to strengthening EPA's partnership with things. And EPA recognizes farmers, ranchers, and agricultural communities as partners in conserving and protecting our nation's land, water quality, and natural resources. At CASA, Clean Water Infrastructure Project wins EPA Award for Innovation backed by the Department of Environmental Quality Funding. The city, and this is from yesterday, the city of Estaca received a Waters Award Tuesday from the US EPA in recognition of its innovative and effective use of its Oregon Clean Water State Revolving Fund loan. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality is loaning the city $5.5 million through its low-interest loan program to replace its 1963 water treatment plant. So, again, infrastructure renewal. Clean water is a good thing, generally speaking. EPA celebrates, we already covered that. Lower Neponset River Superfund site public meeting scheduled for March 25th. Okay, so if you're in that area, go and check it out. Josh F.W. Cook appointed as EPA Pacific Southwest Regional Administrator. Today, U.S. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced that President Donald J. Trump appointed Josh F.W. Cook as EPA's Pacific Southwest Regional Administrator. Regional Administrator Cook will have stewardship to implement and enforce EPA laws in Arizona, California, Hawaii, Nevada, the Pacific Islands, and 148 tribal nations. There. So, Josh Cook is the right person we need to lead Region 9. He understands the unique nature of the Pacific Southwest and will be a great addition to the EPA team, said Administrator Zeldin. Josh is talented with working with state and local partners will be paramount to power the great American comeback across our regions. Before joining the EPA, Regional Administrator Cook was an advisor to the Tribal Council of the Moortown Ranchera of Kanko-Madu Indians, where he designed a decades-long large-scale forest resiliency initiative through government-to-government agreements with tribes, national parks, and multiple U.S. forests. Going on, some people happy, some people not so happy. So, you know, like everything else. This is from March 17th, in case you missed it. Administrator Zeldin in Wall Street Journal. EPA ends the Green New Deal. Cover that. EPA proposes a new cleanup plan for a portion of the Mississippi Phosphate Superfund site. A public meeting and an official comment period will be held for the new plan. Pascagoula, Mississippi. The U.S. EPA invites the public to comment on a proposed plan to remediate operable Unit 3 of the Mississippi Phosphates Corporation Superfund site in Pascagoula, Mississippi. The EPA will present its plan to construct a new on-site wastewater treatment plant at a public meeting. Going on and on and on. Check it out if you're in the neighborhood. Cyrus M. Western, appointed as EPA Mountains and Plains Coordinator. He shouldn't even be like the Western. I know, he probably heard that a million times. U.S. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin announced that President Donald Trump has appointed Cyrus Western to serve as EPA Region 8 Administrator. As we work to power the great American comeback at EPA, we continue to assemble a fantastic team, said Zeldin. I'm grateful that Cyrus Western is joining EPA as a regional administrator for Region 8. I know with Cyrus's experience in Wyoming State House of Representatives, champion energy and wildlife conservation, he will work nonstop to implement President Trump's policies across the region. And any other? Yes, we're going to go over to White House here. Or stuff. Again, we're just reporting the news, not giving any opinion here with this. So this was an executive order issued yesterday. During National Poison Prevention Week, my administration is addressing the threat of overdose deaths in our nation from accidental poisoning by increasing community awareness, strengthening safety measures, and taking decisive action. Good name for a company. Right, we are, if you know me a long time, you know the joke. We are building a new era of American strength, safety, security, and wellness. Among the most serious threats facing our nation is the rise of fentanyl, which is being trafficked illegally across our borders, a crisis of unimaginable proportions that escalated under the previous administration. Fentanyl and other deadly drugs flooded into our towns and cities, falling into hands of our children, siblings, parents, friends, and neighbors. Fentanyl is the leading cause of death for Americans ages 18 to 45, which is, now we're going to talk about, we talked about at the beginning of the program, now we're talking about here, demographics. Here, you have huge numbers of people being eliminated from that age group. There, you're going to have a problem. There's going to be a problem with that. We cannot allow this devastation, vicious assault going on. Every day, American families endure the vet. There is not a family that hasn't been impacted by this crisis. Every day, American families endure the devastating impact of preventable poisoning, whether from household chemicals, improper medication use, or the perilous danger of opioids like fentanyl. This week, my administration urges all Americans to stay informed about the dangers of poisoning and take steps to protect their families. The Poison Helpline, 800-222-1222, is available around the clock, providing free confidential guidance from medical experts. Now, therefore, and it goes on and on and on. Now, therefore, I, Donald Trump, President of the United States of America, do hereby proclaim March 16th through March 22nd to be National Poison Prevention Week. I call upon Americans to observe this week by taking action to safeguard their families from poisonous products, chemicals, medicines, etc. All right. So, Here's another one. This is from today. Removing discrimination, discriminatory ideology from Foreign Service. This is a memorandum from the Secretary of State, Agriculture, Commerce, U.S. Agency for International Development, Chief Executive Officer for the United States Agency for Global Media. I thought they didn't exist anymore. But anyway, that's VOA, among other things. Over the last 4 years, divisive and discriminatory policies were systemically embedded into every part of the federal government, including hiring processes, employee performance evaluations in the Foreign Service. It is a policy of the federal government that hiring in foreign policy positions, like hiring in all other parts of the government, shall be based solely on merit with that. And it goes on and on and on for that. So that's what we have. Now, I have to go to the regular screen because we are going into non-governmental websites here, and we're not allowed to show them on video. We're not licensed, right? Even though other programs do it, I don't want to do it. I don't want to cause us a problem here. Pardon me. Let's take a short commercial break, and we will be back with you.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's safety today.
We haven't had any music lately. Let's throw some music on.
Hard hat on my head, set the alarm. High voltage love in your arms. Steel toe boots, steal my heart. Now love's a machine, start to start. Danger signs, but we don't mind. We're safety certified. Hearts aligned. Locked out, tagged out, hearts entwined.
Extinguisher, spark of desire. Emergency exits, this love's on fire.
Hard hat area, yeah, we comply. Our love's as strong as reinforced supply. Our love's like gears, it turns so true. Turbines of passion spinning with you. Mechanical love, it's built to last. Safety first, roll, that's moving fast.
Romance, it's OSHA approved. Love that's steady, never misused. Red tape barriers can't keep us apart. Love evolves safety from the start.
Danger signs, but we don't mind. We're safety certified. Hearts aligned. Locked out, tagged out, hearts entwined. You and me, we're one of a kind.
Worksite romance, it's OSHA approved. Love that's steady, never misused. Red tape barriers can't keep us apart. Love evolves safety from the start. Worksite romance, it's OSHA approved. Love that's steady, never misused. Red tape barriers can't keep us apart. Love evolves safety from the start.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Posel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant. That's Safety Wars. Join the safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Posel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Yes, Jessica, I am your father. Gotta find out a different graphic here for that. Still learning. Still learning. Anyway, back to the news. This is from NPR.org, March 19th, today. Article by John Daly, Five Ways the Pandemic Changes for Good, for Bad, and Forever. Right? Number one, video calls made the room bigger, distance, and shorter. Gerald, friend of the program here, I would hope friend of the program, Gerald Celente from Kingston, New York, went into this on Coast to Coast last night. Also friends of the program here. They're video calls. My mother-in-law knew Gerald Celente pretty well. Got to know him pretty well. He was one of her customers. He was one of her customers for a couple of years. So she got to know him pretty well up there in Kingston. So his whole thing is think for yourself. Number one, video calls made the room bigger, distances shorter. He was talking about this where the next, as he sees it, the next collapse, the next thing is going to be this real estate budget. One thing is AI. Number two is real estate, commercial real estate here, because nobody is going to the office anymore. Everyone's doing video calls here. But anyway, you know, again, we wouldn't be able to have this call if it weren't for this thing of ours without video calls. Pandemic pups brought us two-legged friends too. Many people became pet owners for the first time during the pandemic. Yeah, a lot of people, right? Unfortunately, they returned them back to a lot of the shelters that they got them from after that. You know, go and get a puppy. Go and get an adult dog, adult cat. They need love. Health inequities were exposed, and so is vaccine hesitancy. So basically, what it came down to is, I think the big loser in all of this, not only were the 1.2 million plus people that were dying in the United States, and I forget what the number is worldwide for COVID, people do not trust the Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control, their own doctor, after the way they were belittled and everything. I was going through some old documentation yesterday on this. And, you know, when we were cleaning things up, I'm finally getting through a lot of stuff here. And I hear, well, you were enforced to get the vaccination. Baloney. We weren't enforced to do it. If you wanted to earn a living, yeah, you were there. If you were in my world, you had to do it. Number four, classrooms change and challenges set in. Again, right, I'm just finishing the highlights. The commentary is my own on here. Dude, you would not believe what I taught to the other parents, especially if they were, the kids were in kindergarten like my daughter, the ongoing stuff with the COVID, with the learning, the fundamentals things the kids are still struggling with. A lot of systems have been overloaded over there. Now, you know, they got these kids hooked on a Zoom school, as we call it up here, and guess what? Now they're pulling the leg out from under them here. But the other thing is this, a lot of people do not, still can't read. They're having issues with reading, with reasoning, with socializing and everything. As I pointed out, when I used to be an activist, it's all about population control. Think about it. Every one of these things, the kids can't relate to themselves. You think that they're going to be, boys and girls are going to be getting together so easy in a couple of years? When the current cast of kids go head into adolescence and puberty? You know, this is going to be, we were awkward in my day because we were hanging out, the boys hung out with the boys exclusively, the girls hung out with the girls. I remember those days. Very awkward. Now we're getting into a whole new level of awkward here. You know, I know with a lot of the kids that I know, their parents were, broke them off of this stuff. In my community, it's very unusual that if your child does not go away to camp And what's the one thing that'll add at camp, especially these sleepaway camps? Come on, you can say it. You can say, what is it? What is it? The thing that's not allowed is cell phones. I mean, they were out, they had approved MP3 players if you wanted music. And I said to my son, you know, when he went to a camp, I said, okay, well, what a transistor radio? What's a transistor radio? I was really transistor radio? Nobody had any idea what was going on here with that. This just came through before, where is it? Right before showtime here. Hold on, let's talk about, and then we're going to talk about a accident investigation here. Let me make sure I got this right. Trump is set to sign an executive order shuttering the Department of Education. This is off of NBC News, but it's all over the place. President Donald Trump is expected to sign an executive order Thursday to close the Department of Education, fulfilling a years-long pledge to dismantle the federal agency, the White House has confirmed. Trump will hold an event at the White House to sign the order directing Education Secretary Linda McMahon of the WWE to take all necessary steps to facilitate the closure of the Department of Education, return education authority to the states while continuing to ensure the effective and uninterrupted delivery of services, programs, and benefits that rely on this, right? The formally closing the department requires an act of Congress, but even without formally shutting it down, the Trump administration can effectively make it nearly impossible for employees to carry out their work, as it is done with USAID. And we're going to comment on that. I think if we go to hour two here. This is from Iowa. So KCCI investigates. This is from KCCI.com. KCCI investigate. OSHA finds Iowa youth residential facility $37,500 in workers' death. Now, something I want to point out. OSHA is very limited in what they could do. There was one story, if I went on earlier this week, that went into the disaster that OSHA was going through with what was called the most dangerous workplace in America. And the place is now shuttered over financial reasons, not necessarily over OSHA violations. And I think what happens when situations like that happen, it undermines the credibility of everybody involved in the system, whether you are a corporate safety director, whether you are a regulator, whether you or whatever, with this, my opinion is that my one man's opinion, this whole Occupational Safety and Health Act has to be reformed and updated. Here we still have, right, the official number 5,000 people per year that they could track with the OSHA 300 logs that are being that are dying. But OSHA acknowledges another 50,000 are dead per year because of occupational illnesses. Right? Again, 55,000 people a year dying. That's not so good. That's half of the fentanyl problem. Think of it that way. And look at all that we're doing with the fentanyl. And that's every year, and it's been there. So, again, needs to be reformed. Now, the bill in Congress to get rid of it, okay, well, guess what? Maybe update it. That would be, so I have some ideas on that I'm going to share in the near future on this. So, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. We're getting there. We're getting there. The occupational, so again,
OSHA cites three violations, two being serious in this place in Iowa, with the May 8th death of an employee. And this, when was the story today? Youth Group Home Services, there was a Youth Group Home Service, I'm not going to mention the name. The worker was suffered a head injury after she was pushed by a teen at the home. She died days later at a local hospital. As we do know, OSHA was dealing with this. It's been an ongoing issue with healthcare workers, and this is what it sounds like, a healthcare worker being assaulted here. The teenager has been charged with second-degree murder. The first citation was for a violation of Iowa's law to provide, and it was their general duty clause. The second citation was PPE. What are you supposed to wear, a hard hat with that? Really? Have all your employees wear hard hats? I don't think that's going to be a feasible solution there. In a statement, the facility told KCCI all mitigations of are complete and all current fines have been paid. We are pleased to see that OSHA's formally recognized what we knew all along. The company did not take appropriate action to ensure the safety of the victim. You do not put a 105-pound female counselor in a position to monitor a violent 200-pound troubled child, particularly when serious threats by the child have been made to the victim in the past. The result was tragic and preventable. Mathis is scheduled to appear in court on April 4th. Oh, sorry there. On April 4th to plead guilty to voluntary manslaughter as part of a plea deal. I mean, no ongoing thing. I mean, they treat healthcare workers, I'm sorry to say, they treat them like Wuvno. Like they're second-class citizens here, second-class workers. So we're going to go over a story, right, that was recently updated here, coming from OSHA, Illinois' OSHA incident report. So we're going to do, since this is a government document, we're going to share the screen. This is inspection number 1652, report date March 4th, earlier this month, right? And the incident, original incident, again, let's see what we have here. Again, like with the NTSB reports out there, if you want to learn how to write an incident report and the basic format and template, right, there's a couple of things you can do. Go to the OSHA website. They have things, but you can also read these government reports. Deming incident, water department employee drowns during repair of a valve in a water main vault. A 20-year-old male maintenance worker drowned due to engulfment in a flooded water main vault and entrapment of his right hand during repairing of a leaking valve for a 12-inch water main. Contributing factors. Key contributing factors identified in this investigation include lack of compliance with several confined space standards, lack of oversight and auditing by management, insufficient training on operating in confined spaces. A charged 12-inch water main was not isolated and drained. That's lockout tag on 1910-147. Lack of hazard assessment and reassessment. Lack of rescue capability at the worksite. Lack of tools to isolate water valves at the worksite and inadequate personal protective equipment. Recommendations. To implement a compliance-specific written confined space program, ensure strict compliance with confined space standards through initial refresher training and supervision, continually assess and control. Risk, implement briefings at a start work program and stop and reassess when plan A does not work. Right? Now, this is what my problem is here. Right? And again, I look, a lot of this is first time. Right? It's the hazard matrix table. And you can say, well, what do you mean, Jim? That's just a piece of paper. Okay, yeah, okay. Well, you can't, let's face it. What was the risk to the decision makers here? In this case, the government employees. What was their risk? zero, zero, big nada, zero, zero, zero. No risk. No training, no education, don't care. This is why I have a problem with sovereign immunity. And this person was a victim. Make no doubt about it. This person is a victim of sovereign immunity, right, with this. And this is one of the things that we have to go into. My opinion, Jimmy's opinion here. On February 23rd, 2023, at blah, 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 a Village employee had occurred at approximately 30 minutes earlier. Illinois Social opened an inspection to investigate the circumstances involving a water department employee that drowned while repairing a water main valve in an underground vault. The worker was removed from the vault after approximately 52 minutes and transferred to the nearby hospital, pronounced dead. Victim, age 20, again, young guy. Right? Graduated in 2020, recent graduate. He was hired by the village as a seasonal employee. How are seasonal employees treated? Like move now, like second-class citizens. Right? And again, 40 hours a week, the incident. Right? So, the vault was only accessible through a manhole cover that provided an 18-inch in diameter access hole, a 12-inch polyvinyl chloride water main pipe equipped with a butterfly valve ran through the vault. These valves are installed. Right, the village utilized a private contractor exercise and assess water valves throughout the system. On February 21st, 2 days before the incident, the contractor advised the village that a 12-inch underground water main valve was leaking, needed a repair. The water department supervisor and foreman met to review the scope of work for the repair. This included the shutdown of water service and issuing boil water notices for affected residents immediately east and west of the valve. And the repair work was scheduled for the next day and was not considered an emergency. So we have a picture of the area. And it's undetermined if any formal work plan was communicated from the foreman to the employees. It looks like we're going overtime here, guys, over 1 hour. So if I can run overtime, it'll be in the podcast here. And, you know, we'll be releasing the video cast very shortly. Following is an approximate timeline of events on February 23rd, 2023. 7:30 a.m., employees began the day at the water department shop to gather tools and equipment to perform the valve repair. The foreman, right, and another worker arrived at the work site. The foreman drove over the utility truck. Again, hold on. The foreman, the victim, worker number one, so 20-year-old as a foreman. Aye, aye, aye. So he was the one who with the most, didn't he want to be a foreman? Was he trained to be a foreman? Did he know what else was going on? And if he did, why did he let it happen? If he didn't know what was going on, why was everybody okay with it? And another worker arrived at the work site. The foreman drove a utility truck. Worker number one drove a pickup truck. And worker number two drove a vacuum truck. After arriving at the site, the foreman began closing water valves to the west of the valve and going on and on. The foreman worker opened hydrants on the west side of the valve plan for repair to relieve water pressure. Okay, water valves are not closed on the east side of the valve as originally planned. It is unknown why this didn't occur. Here's a diagram of the incident. The vault's manhole cover was removed. The vacuum truck was used to remove water, debris, and gravel in the vault to expose a leaking valve. Worker number one entered the vault to assist with vacuuming and cleaning out the area around the bottom of the valve. The repair involved replacing a leaking gasket on the west side of the valve. The worker number one was removed the flange on the west side of the valve and it slid back on the water main pipe. Initial attempts of the worker number one to remove the rubber gasket failed. The foreman decided the isolated PVC water main pipe, this is a timeline here, needed to be cut to complete the valve repair. The foreman went back to the shop to pick up tools. Right? And During that time, worker number one attempted other methods of removing the gasket, and worker number two, they waited for the foreman to come back. So is the foreman the victim here or not? Don't know. We'll find out. Hopefully not. I'm getting all confused with the way this is running here. The foreman returned worker number one back to the vault and inserted screws into the gasket. He likely used pliers to pull on the screws to attempt to free the gasket from the valve body. This is also unsuccessful. Worker number one then began using a hydraulically powered chainsaw to cut the isolated pipe. Worker number two continued to use a vacuum truck to remove groundwater in the vault as well as unpressurized residual water that was coming out of the cut in the isolated pipe. The chainsaw became stuck. Worker number one was unable to pull it out of the cut. Worker number two switched from using a large vacuum truck into a smaller portable pump to continue removing water. Between 10:30 and 11, the foreman called another worker, number three, to bring a backhoe. The written statement from the foreman. So the foreman is the one who didn't die. Okay. All right. So that we're good. Put a strap on the backhoe. Remove tension on the pipe. Foreman texted worker number two that he needed to more pipe. Worker number two attempted to call the foreman to ask how much pipe was needed, but there was no answer. Worker number two then drove a pickup truck to the site to the foreman. So this is pretty good if you could keep the workers and the foreman right. Pressurized water from the charged east section number 12 water main pipe blew the valve off the pipe, bringing tremendous volume of water, began filling up the small vault. Worker number one told the foreman that he was stuck. Foreman number one grabbed worker number one, attempted to pull him out of the vault, but he was not able to. In seconds, the water completely engulfed worker number one and began to erupt from the manhole. The foreman waved down a village police officer and told him, call 911. I got a guy down there stuck, and the water valve blew up, and he's stuck and cannot get him out. Foreman then ran one block to the north, attempting to shut off water valves. The foreman also attempted to call number two to get longer valve keys to close the water valves and was unable to reach him. Right? They have a picture here, and The first fire department units quickly arrived at the scene. The fire department responds through 10 certified technical rescue technicians seen in approximately 10 minutes. While worker number two was back at the shop loading up pipe, he noticed missed calls from the foreman on his phone. Worker number two tried to call back several times. Eventually, contacted the foreman and said the valve came loose. The foreman told the worker number two to get the long valve key to shut the water off, as the key the foreman had was not long enough. While driving to meet... So the key is a wrench, is what this is. It's a wrench. While en route, worker number two was approached by the village street supervisor and public works director asking what was happening. The street supervisor advised worker number two that someone was trapped, right? The worker number two was not aware of this, as the foreman had told old worker number two about the valve coming loose. All right. Look at all that water that came out of there. A lot of water. Illinois Ocean opened an inspection to investigate the incident. The Village Water Department and the Village Water Department. They went through the whole thing. 3 months before the incident, the village had hired a new public works director after realizing the need to change the safety culture of the department. It is unlikely the new director had a full understanding of the practices. This is the important thing, right? The incident revealed critical lapses in safety practices and procedures that resulted in an environment with little room for error. Failure to adhere to OSHA regulations regarding permit required confined spaces, PPE, and hazard assessments led to a cascading series of events that were fatal. How many times have they done this prior to this? Is my question. No evaluation. Specifically, the incident, the water department did not prepare a permit before allowing entry into this space. Another violation. After pressurized water blew the valve pipe off, worker number one was trapped with no realistic rescue capability on site. Notably, he was not wearing full body harness with a retrieval line and a hoist as required by the employer's own written program and OSHA standards. Additionally, the foreman, who was the only employee present outside of the vault, at the time of the valve blew off, left the immediate work site. This led to confusion. Right? What? When the responders showed up, nobody knew what the hell was going on, basically. While Illinois OSHA cannot definitively identify the specific action resulting in the valve blowing off, available evidence suggests the following series of events. Once the drain pipe was cut, the opposing force pressing the valve against the pressurized water on the east side of the valve was compromised. After the cuts, the strength of the gasket and flange interface between the valve and the pressurized pipe was all that was holding the valve in place. A significant amount of force from the pressurized water pushed against the closed valve plate. It is possible that additional cutting and or use of chain attached to the backhoe to remove tension in the pipe was enough for the pressurized water to blow the valve off the pipe. As this occurred, worker number one's right hand became trapped in the cut section of the pipe, preventing his escape. So apparently his arm got stuck somewhere in there. I have pictures here. Right, some of the other pictures, again, I forgot to hit share on this. So, with that, so for your home viewers, here, the nice diagrams here. This is going to be, this is from the Department of Labor from Illinois. This is probably something you guys want to save and use as a training aid here. So, again, not doing the right thing here by the, here. So here are the findings. Workers involved were not aware of the Water Department's written confined space program. That is a training issue. Some of the workers involved received training and permit required confined spaces, but the training was generic and several years old. Department safety culture tolerated employees entering permit required confined spaces with little to no hazard controls. Management oversight and internal auditing was absent. The department failed to properly identify and classify permit-required confined spaces. The department had not conducted a PPE hazard assessment. The permit was not issued. No lockout, tagout, or isolating this thing. No realistic rescue capability. After the initial and each subsequent gasket removal method failed, workers did not reassess the situation or plan between each method for potential hazards or potential outcomes. The perceived risk of working the vault was low, however, the actual risk was high. He had no guvenum. At least one employee serving as the legally required attendant did not remain at the immediate work site after the emergency started. Long valve keys used to open and close water valves were not at the work site, delaying efforts to isolate the charged water main. Again, it goes on here, right? With everything on here. Tell your supervisor if you believe you had not had the appropriate training. Speak up if you're the worker. Individual risk assessment. Maintain awareness. So, to their credit here, all right, they identified a whole bunch of stuff that the supervisor and department leaders did not do. No hazard assessment. I won't read every one, but it comes down to no hazard assessment, no planning, just do your job when it comes to safety. Again, there's part of the problem here is this. If right, and it works in a lot of the workplaces I work in. If I'm in a state like New York, where something like this happens in private industry, people are going to jail. People get very compliant real quick. Well, hey, this guy gets killed, not you, not me. You. You're responsible. You're the competent person. You're the supervisor. Do I have the authority to hire? Do I have the authority to fire? Do I have the authority to discipline people? Do I have the authority to make changes? Right. Right. Do I have the authority to reward? Did I put this out for bid? You're the guy that hired him or her, hired the company. Right? With that, not the safety person that's in here. Our job is to assess hazards, right? Do our job, provide leadership. Very rarely does a safety person have the authority to start to throw people off jobs or discipline people. Very, very, very rarely. Let's continue. All right. On February 23rd, right, Sirius, they got them on 1910-146, permit required confined space entry E1. Again, this is general industry maintenance here. Sirius 1910-146, develop and implement means, procedures, and practices necessary for safe permit entry operations, including but not limited to the following: isolating the permit space. Repeat series, PPE. So apparently they got nabbed already with this. Right? And again, they were requiring an abatement certification on this. So 1910-132, PPE assessment. Series 1, 1910-146-C1, permit required confined space. The employer shall evaluate the space. 1910-146-G3, permit required confined space. The training shall establish employee proficiency. Sirius 1910-146, duties of the intendant. Guy walked away. Sirius 1 1910-146-K3I, no harness. All right. The employer, so there was actually a fine here. Wow. But again, what do they care? It's not their money. The employer also received a hazard alert notification about the confined space rescue. If the village intends to continue utilizing the municipal fire department for confined space rescue and emergency services, it must recognize that, like many area fire departments, the fire department relies on a regional team comprising of members of area fire departments to provide technical rescue. While this regional team is highly capable, it also takes time to assemble and respond. As such, whereas the initial fire department response time to technical rescue incident may be less than 5 minutes, it could be several minutes. Remember, OSHA, 4 to 5, right? You got to have a response, 4 minutes, roughly, by letter of interpretation. So after issuance by Illinois OSHA, the village contested a citation that included willful violations and monetary penalties. After several discussions, a settlement was reached, and the village agreed to the following: $16,000 fine. Really? Right? The penalty amount was adjusted to $16,000. Two violations were amended from his classification willful to his classification of serious. Again, it's not coming out of their pocket. Cooperate with OSHA on writing this incident report that is designed as a learning tool. Cooperate with Illinois OSHA on an approximate 1 hour presentation and deliver it in person at least once in each of the 5 Illinois OSHA enforcement districts and at least twice virtually with the presence of a village employee and an employee of Illinois OSHA. Okay, so you're going to, okay, good. This is along the lines of public shaming. Now, basically, I'm right. Shame, blame, and retrain. Usually not useful, right? When you're dealing with a worker. In this case, when you're dealing with egregious situations like this, no safety culture or anything else, perhaps the shame, blame, and retrain might be appropriate. A shame and blame might be appropriate. Again, this is $16,000. Was anybody fined in this? I mean, personally fined? No. Anyone lose their job over this? No. Do they have to deal with the mental anguish and guilt and grief of a fellow coworker dying, 20-year-old kid? Yeah, I guess so. But I'm going to tell you, after all the axe investigations that I have personally been involved with here, this is what happens. It's along the lines of, I don't know if this happened here, but all the ones I'm involved in, right? And I deal with a lot of guys that are a little bit sociopathic, a lot of these foremen. And it's along the lines of, right, this is pre-accident, before the bang. Jimmy, I don't think this is a hazard. This could never happen. What do you? Well, when something like that happens, this is especially in the old days, right? Then I'll worry about it as that. But I've never heard of this kind of hazard before. Oh, have you had safety training? No, but I've never heard of this kind of hazard. I've been doing this for years. Never considered this. And then the incident happens. And then what happens after the incident happens? Everybody's all upset with the funerals. And what a great guy. I loved him. Great co-worker. Blah, 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 blah. And then the job site is shut down for a couple of days. They start working again. What do you think happens? Back to what they were doing before. Never learned the lesson. Has never happened. Those are fatalities. Imagine not caring after a major incident or a boo-boo, a little boo-boo. Imagine that. They don't care. Well, I had to hear about this for a while, right, after one accident in particular, double fatality, third person with this, right? I got called in to do the axe investigation. Oh, we loved him. We loved him. The two guys, oh, wow, they were so good. Oh, we loved them. We loved them. I said, and this is after we found out what happened, after everything was settled, then the story really came out what happened. I said, oh, yeah, you loved him, huh? Did you love him? Did you love him enough to work safely, encourage him to work safely? Did you love him enough to stop work when he was doing something unsafe? No, you didn't love him. I'm sorry, you didn't love him. If you loved him, I wouldn't have to be here getting hired to do safety audits with the same crap going on all the time. You talk about a slap in the face? Yeah, well, they weren't too happy with me, but you know what happened? A week or two later, client calls me in and said, we were waiting for you to say that. I said to him, you hired the guy. What's the issue? You couldn't control him? No, we can't control him because he's like the only one that knows what's going on here. So you're relying on a heroic act, which we know are in danger in itself. Right? Relying on that one employee. And this is the attitude that he has, and you put him in charge? Really? And I had a relationship with a client like that where I could talk with them that way. They were all members of the Polish community here. And, that was one of the reasons why I got hired. I'll be honest with you, was that culturally Polish, and I'm able to deal with Polish people. Culturally, we have something in common. And Polish people can talk to other Polish people very frankly without there being like any long-term offense taken, right? So I knew I could get away. I couldn't get away with that anywhere else. So I got away with that there, with that. And it's sad. I don't know what to tell you. It's very, very sad that you have to get that way. And then, right, once we got that in there, years later, this happened. What do you think happened? The corporate culture changed. At least for that individual, we finally got through to him with this. But the thing is, you have to be willing to take that risk. Often, us as safety people, we do not have the gonads to take a risk. But that's what we're paid to do sometimes, take a risk. But be a little bit more diplomatic than I am sometimes with these situations, which I'm always diplomatic, but sometimes diplomacy ain't enough with this stuff. They hire you to do a job, and you got to do it. And you have to figure out how to do that job. And, like I said at the beginning of the show here, right? Like I did at the beginning of the show, we have these issues come up here. And you have to have backbone. You have to have, what's the word I'm looking for? You have to be able to push back, have backbone, to be diplomatic. That's what you're doing. You're there to save lives here. And we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back with our traditional hour two political discussion here.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
On the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
And here we are, Safety Wars Hour 2. We're talking about politics. All right, so we're going to talk about terrorism today. Domestic terrorism. So there have been two major incidents here, ongoing incidents. One is an ongoing incident, I guess we could call it. All right, hold on. Let me close this out before I get into trouble here. Two incidents going on. One of them is a swatting, and the other one is arson attacks against Tesla. Regardless of what your opinion is on Elon Musk or anything else, or any other people being swatted, which are some supporters, and swatting is not new. This has been going on for a number of years, where you might say an unpopular opinion, and then all of a sudden, someone says, calls up the local police, oh, yeah, you know, there's something bad going on there, you got to check it out, and then they show up with a SWAT team, thus swatting, all right? And very few people get caught for doing this stuff. And Now, very hard to track and everything else. It seems that when they do put their mind to it, the federal government, and it is a federal offense, is my understanding. They managed to catch their person or persons. And right now, with the number of these things going on, in the last, especially since January 20th, with the number of these things going on, it's hard to not believe that this is not a coordinated effort here. So I have right here, I guess I could share this. So this is from Domestic Terrorism Definitions and Terminology. So domestic terrorism for FEI's purposes is referenced in the U.S. Code 18 U.S.C. 23315 and defines activities as involving acts dangerous to human life that are in violation of criminal laws in the United States or of any state, to appearing to be intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, influence the policy of government by intimidation or coercion, or affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping, and occur primarily within the territorially jurisdiction of the United States. And using the term domestic terrorism, DHS looks to the Homeland Security Act definition of terrorism, right? The provision defines terrorism of any activity, right? That's in 6 U.S. Code 10118, is dangerous to human life or potentially destructive of critical infrastructure or key resources, is a violation of the criminal laws of the United States or any state, appears to be intimidate or coerce a civilian population to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, or to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping. And they list all different things, right? A racial or ethically motivated violent extremism, anti-government or anti-authority violent extremism, animal rights or environmental violent extremism, abortion-related violent extremism, and all other domestic forms, and it goes into how they define an incident. So what's my point here? We just had, right, so if we look at the map of all of the Tesla stuff that was burned, these are acts of domestic terrorism. Well, it's the way it is, right? What are we going to stand for domestic terrorism? Look, we disagree with politicians all the time, state, local, federal, what have you. So what? That does not allow you to go out and act like a bleep-a-dee-bleep. Can't do it. Does it have to be that obvious? Peace. Everybody calm down. Peace. Public discourse. Go to your, write letters. On social media, you can contact all these government officials, right? Go down to your congressman's office, your senate office, your congresswoman's office, your mayor. Protest peacefully and legally. This is absolutely ridiculous that people are going out there and starting. You're not helping your cause. I'm going to tell you that. You are not helping your cause. So, again, who was swatted, right? Alex Jones, obviously, all the time. Patriot radio host Joe Pags, swatted, right? Another person was swatted on the InfoWars team. And someone else allegedly ordered a pizza and had it delivered there from the recently murdered employee there. Attorney General calls Tesla arson attacks nothing short of domestic terrorism. Attorney General Pam Bondi called the recent spate of arson attacks and vandalism against Tesla vehicles nothing short of domestic terrorism. Okay, well, do something about it. You know? This is from Cash Patel. FBI Director Cash Patel on Friday revealed that the agency investigating a recent spike in swatting incidents after several conservative media figures said they were targeted. This isn't about politics. Weaponizing the law enforcement against any American is not only morally reprehensible, but also endangers lives, including those of our officers. No one's gotten killed yet here, but it's like that. You know, we got to stop. So everybody just calm down, take a chill pill. Right? Remember, I know it's very upsetting for some people here to, you know, with some of the policies that we have. Now, let's point out something else here. I've been following politics since way back. I remember sitting on my daddy's lap when I was about 4 years old, watching election returns. He used to work second shift, and sometimes I would go and hang out with him. I remember in Carteret, New Jersey, we'd hang out and watch the news that night. And one of my earliest memories was it might have been 1973, might have been 1972, 74, in that region. I was 2 to 4 years old. I distinctly remember watching election returns with my father on election night. Right, he voted, he went to work, came home, 11 o'clock, they're doing election returns there. And we're watching them and everything else. So I've been doing this for a long time. The one that I remember first that I studied in depth and paid attention to was the assassination of Anwar Sadat from Egypt. Because I remember my mother had taken me to a doctor's appointment, and she had a little transistor radio with her, and she was crying over Anwar Sadat. Not that she liked him, but the way that he died over there with that was very brave. You could go research it yourself. So I've been following this for an awful long time. One of the things that we as conservatives or Republicans have always said was this, right? The national debt is skyrocketing. All my time I've been paying attention, this is the early 1980s here, late 1970s. And one day there's going to be a political reckoning day. It's going to be in the future. And you had the mainstream Republicans saying, oh, don't worry about it, not a problem. Oh, we'll print our way out of this. We'll do this. We'll do that. But everything's an ever-evolving world, ever-evolving time. And what we have here is a situation that at least is perceived by the president and his cabinet as being a dire situation with the national debt. Well, it is. They're making all these cuts and doing all this other stuff. We'll see what the long-term impacts are and finally getting done. After 50 years, it was a great thing to run on. We're going to reduce the national debt. We're going to reduce the national debt. We're going to reduce national debt. But the people in charge of reducing national debt, they were riding the gravy train. A lot of us are riding the gravy train, too, with this. And something like 8,000 NGOs controlling 7,000, controlling a big boatload. Trillions of dollars. We have evidence of current and former politicians getting kickbacks on the arms dealing, even with Ukraine and outside Ukraine. All this stuff is coming to an end, it appears, at this point. Let's see if it's actually going to sustain itself here. With this, and there are painful cuts. This impacts human beings. So, for example, the National Forestry Service cuts. These are human beings. There are very few analogs outside the National Forest Service and private industry. either you're going to go to a state agency and let go by the federal government, or you're going to find something else. The hospitality industry, someone had pointed at. Okay. They're going to go, and I mean someone who I trust and I know is very familiar with National Forestry Service and the people there. Well, they could go into, let's say, working for a forestry company or a state government or even in the hospitality industry. Okay. You're making boatloads of money for the National Forestry Service. How much is now you got to start over again? And you're going to be a hospitality industry where those are often low-paid jobs? They're not going to hire you as a manager. They're going to hire you as something less than a manager, unless there's something really dynamic going on here. So all this is very disconcerting. There are human impacts here. Hopefully the human impacts are going to be mitigated here in the long term. I think long term we'll be okay here, even with the stock market. We're going through a correction and everything else. But we'll see where this is. May you live in interesting times. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Pozel. I will see you back here tomorrow, God willing.